as I mentioned, we've been exploring a practice that I learned from my teacher, who's a Tibetan Buddhist monk named Kempo Pema Wangdak. And it's a practice that is revered in Tibetan Buddhist community, in part for how accessible it is. Right? So often we have the wish to really incorporate our spiritual explorations and our practice into every aspect of our life. Right? That's I think a commonly held wish. Right, to bring it into our experience of family, to bring it into our closest relationships, to bring it into any personal difficulty or challenge, right? To bring it into every moment so that there's something that's really holding us in being. But of course, for many of us, that's a real challenge. That's the aspiration. Which is why we continue to practice and to study and to seek spiritual community. Right? But then the mind sometimes has a way of doing its own thing, right? And reverting to patterns that become very entrenched and very compelling. And if you're like me, you can spend a fair amount of time exploring the spiritual healing arts and still have moments where you think, how can it be, right, that some even subtle feeling of fear or anxiety or rage or disappointment, right, has sometimes arisen more powerfully than the teachings. And so this practice of Lojong is meant to offer us a way to keep what helps us feel well, what helps us feel present, right? What helps us really be able to enter to reality, whatever that might be, because for most of us, reality is rather complicated, right, as we've been exploring. In all moments. And so we've spent some time over the last at least 6 months, maybe longer, having a look at the core teachings of Lojong. And in our last session, we started to talk about the pithy phrases that were meant to help us continue the practice. And so today, I'm going to say a few words about three of those phrases, and hopefully they will be helpful to you. So the first one, and this is from Trelleg Kyabgon's book on Lojong, and he was a wonderful Buddhist teacher. This was a central part of his practice, so this is his commentary on Lojong. And in this phrase, which is phrase number 39, it says, all spiritual practices should be done with one intention. All spiritual practices should be done with one intention. So as you can see, these teachings are meant to first inspire some curiosity, as if to say, well, what exactly did the Buddha mean by that? What's the intention, right? So the first mental arising is one of curiosity. And then the curiosity can lead to the response. Right? All spiritual practices should be done with one intention. And the object of focus is bodhicitta. Bodhicitta. And for those of you who might be new to that concept, bodhicitta is really a sacred part or a foundational part of the Buddha Dharma. That means enlightenment mind, or the mind that wishes to be fully awake for the benefit of all. Right? So the bodhicitta aspiration is to embark with devotion, right? Total commitment, joyful commitment, right? Never coercive, but joyful commitment to be as well, to be as present, right? To be as receptive to reality as possible for the benefit of others. Right? That's really the bodhicitta way. And of course, sometimes it can feel as though we pursue our spiritual path for our own personal well-being, right? And sometimes we need to do so, right? If we're in pain or we're struggling through something that is terribly confusing, or we're experiencing a loss, right, that is overwhelming, or maybe multiple losses, right? That can happen. It can feel as though we need our spiritual community and our spiritual insights so that we can get through, right? That we can find a way to navigate life and to manage loss and death. But the teaching of bodhicitta wants to suggest that if we can always include others in our practice, right, then the benefits become so much more abiding. They really proliferate. Yeah. And so this practice, all spiritual practices should be done with one intention. It's to take bodhicitta as the object of our awareness. May I be well? May I be a wakeful person? And that's my way of translating enlightenment. Wakeful, right? I see reality. Boy, is it complicated. Many, many layers, a lot of complexity, a lot of unconscious content within most of us, I would say, within all of us to some degree. Collectively and in many different communities, a lot of unconscious content, right? But may I make room in my mind and in my heart for the fullness of that reality in ways that benefit others, right? And in ways that benefit countless others. And of course, we know this from our spiritual mentors who really give us inspiration, right? If you think about our great mentors, right? The people who come to mind, they're almost archetypal at this point, as the people who could face into extraordinarily challenging, extraordinarily complex reality, but without backing away, without having to defend against it. Right? They give us needed inspiration for our capacity to do something similar. And this is the optimism of the Buddhist perspective, that we all come into this life with all of the needed internal resources to do so. Right? I mean, it sounds almost a little fantastical sometimes, right? Sometimes we think, is that true? Is it true that we all have this capacity? The historical Buddha Shakyamuni felt strongly that that was so. And almost every teacher that I have encountered since says, yes, we come into this life with a layer of mind that's very spacious, that's very receptive, right? That can allow for reality. And if we can cultivate that part of the mind and heart, for the benefit of every human being, right? Whether we know them, whether we like them, whether we agree with their politics. And this is, of course, very hard, as we've discussed. But that's the challenge, right? I'm not suggesting there's anything easy about it. And my teacher is the first to admit, right? This is not easy, right? To sustain some deepest level of respect every human being, which doesn't mean we agree with their behavior, their choices, right? How they navigate life. In the same way, we don't usually agree with our own choices, right? Often we have an intention and then we're doing something completely opposite. And we're thinking, what? What is going on here? But the challenge is to sustain that abiding respect, that abiding curiosity. Oh, I had the intention to visit my sick friend and offer her sustenance and cancel my other plans and delay my vacation, whatever it is. Hi. And really show up. But then it didn't happen. I got a little nervous. I was afraid about getting devoured. I started to feel overwhelmed. I went to the movies. I took a nap. I'm giving you, these are very banal examples, right? But if the feeling of wakefulness is what's holding that whole endeavor, then there's an opportunity to see, okay, this something else happened that I was not expecting. I'm going to stay curious about that. Right? Rather than judging myself harshly, I'm going to try to understand what was activated, what was at play. And I'm going to cultivate, I'm going to keep cultivating that curiosity so that it benefits everybody who's probably going through something similar, right? Who's struggling with their own mind, trying to figure out how to be a family member, how to have interpersonal relationships that don't fall apart or that are relatively sustainable, that are enjoyable, how to participate in group life, right, with relative tolerance and patience and harmony. I'm going to keep at that for the benefit of every single person, whether or not I even meet them. Does that make sense? Yeah. It's a beautiful teaching, right? Because it really challenges the part of the mind that tends to worry about oneself and be extremely concerned about one's own experience at the expense of others. And I know this is an extraordinary group of people, right? You're all very other-centric, and you've all dedicated so much time and energy to caring for countless others. So I include myself, right, and the people who need to hear the teachings just to stay curious about what it's like to support our own well-being, right, but to link it to the well-being of others. Right, that's the teaching of bodhicitta. Yeah. All right. So the next pithy teaching. Sure.
What's coming up for me is trust.
Uh-huh.
You have to trust yourself,
yes.
Trust the universe or your higher power. Because, and also another thing that was coming up for me is readiness. Because if you're not ready and you plunge into this intention, it could end up in a very nasty way. Someone could take advantage of you.
Mm-hmm.
You could be used, manipulated, possibly.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You have to be willing to take the risk.
Mm-hmm.
So trust and risk come up for me. And it's a beautiful ideal. And the words, it's hard, keep coming up for me. It's difficult.
Yes.
I feel like there's miles to go and promises to keep.
Yeah, thank you. Did everybody hear the comment? This is a really challenging teaching. Yeah, and we have to have some readiness. Right? It's a very intelligent response. And in Buddhist teachings, there are actually options for how to engage bodhicitta. So when we take vows to be a bodhisattva, right, and the bodhisattva is an image in Tibetan Buddhism of someone who really has the ability to be fully enlightened, fully awake, and therefore really choose their conditions, right, choose where they're going to be in life, but they opt to stay with the suffering, right, until all suffering is eliminated. Right, that's the engine of bodhicitta. When we take those vows, there's what's known as the aspiring vow, right, to practice bodhicitta. I aspire to, sounds like a good idea. I'd like to be somebody who does not shy away from reality, does not defend against certain parts of it, right, in ways that I know I'm aware cause suffering to myself and to others. But then there's the venturing vow. I'm not only gonna think about this and study it and contemplate it, which of course is critically important. We can't venture without aspiring. Right? I mean, you were all somewhere before you arrived here and you were thinking about your options, right? You could go to Central Park, you could go see a friend, you could go take a nap, you could go see Rocket Man, you could do all sorts of things. You have to aspire to be here, right? To practice, to meditate, to contemplate. But then you venture forth, right? You started walking in the direction of the forest gallery, right? And so both parts of that process are needed. Yeah. And often the aspiring takes quite a bit of time. Right, and you know this with anything that you were curious about in your life that you imagined would usher in some well-being, but you may have hesitated, right, to fully embark upon. Right? This is true of every healing commitment, right, whether it's interpersonal relationship or relationship to work. Right, often there's a part that says, let me think about it. Let me understand it to the best of my ability. And then when there's enough readiness, let me venture forth. Okay. So the next bit of teaching is at the beginning and at the end, two things to be done. It's fun, aren't they? At the beginning and at the end, two things to be done. So what that's alluding to is the beginning of the day and the end of the day. Right? How to work with our mind right when we wake up, and how to work with the mind before we go to sleep in a way that bolsters as much well-being as possible. And so in the Buddhist path, the opportunity would be to wake up, the eyes open, and to embark on some prayer, right? And it could be bodhicitta prayer. May this day be a time of healing for the benefit of all. May I work carefully with my mind and my heart. May I try to understand my various obstacles and vow to work them through to the very best of my ability in ways that usher in happiness and freedom from suffering for all beings. It's a very lovely way of just readying the mind for life, right? Which is a contrast to waking up and reaching for what are my emails? My text? What does the New York Times say? Right? I mean, there's so many ways now for the mind to immediately go to something very secular in nature, which is, of course, not necessarily a bad thing. Sometimes we have to do that. But more often than not, what we're reaching for almost immediately is not an abiding source of well-being. That's the point of the Bodhidharma. To really be curious about what we're going to be well, to be awake. Information. Right now, of course, we're all trained. We've been well trained. Talk about re-education. It's been about 20 years of re-education to need information immediately and to feel very insecure without it. But of course, that kind of information, it's not really fuel for well-being when it's most needed. Right? I mean, on an average day when nothing shocking is happening, maybe you'll enjoy it. Maybe it'll be interesting. Right? You'll have something to be thinking about and talking about with friends or when you go to dinner. Right? You talk to your loved one. Right? But when there's a panicky trip to the emergency room, something very shocking or difficult, unexpected is happening. It's never that information, right? It's never that excitement or pleasure that sustains us. And that's really what the teachings are getting at. How to work with the mind and the heart so that no matter what is happening, there's something within us, right? Some clarity, right? Some trust, right? Some respect for our own deepest goodness. That's there, that's present, that's available. Yeah. So it says here, regular morning practice clears our mental cobwebs and helps us to face the day in a calm and positive frame of mind. We shouldn't just feel as if we're surviving each day, although sometimes that's what we can do, right? With a sense of relief, then drift complacently into the evening without thinking about anything. Right? The Lojong spirit, in a way, it discourages that ennui. It says, oh, we can actually work very deeply, right? So that at night, before we're falling asleep, this part is actually more challenging for me because all the imprints of the day are so present for me. Even if it's something I watched on Netflix, my mind wants to go there, right? So we're very sensitive. Why did that character do that? Why did the writers focus on that theme? Or why did my loved one say this and not that? And sometimes we're digging deep back into our history. Why did that thing happen to me? I seemed to be trying to lead a good life, and then this painful thing happened. I don't understand it. I don't accept it. How can I avoid it in the future? Right? So the mind is so active, very tumultuous. And so this Pithi teaching, at the beginning and at the end, right, two sacred things to be done. To focus the mind, right, to just let the mind settle, and then to bring it to a sacred teaching, to something that gives you a sense of true well-being. And to think about your day. How did the bodhicitta practice go? Was it more aspirational and then there were some obstacles? I had intended to carry all beings in my heart, but then I got enraged with somebody. I lost patience. I gave up hope. I got anxious. Whatever it is, I may these dreams to come offer me clarity that are needed for the benefit of all. May this time of rest offer me the feeling of being restored in order to embark again. And I wish to be fully awake, right, with a sense of joy for the benefit of all. It's a lovely way to practice.
Yes. Excuse me. That really spoke to me when you talked about overcoming the ennui. Because since I've been practicing, when I get to a point where I'm very bored and frustrated, that's really when meditation and focus comes up now. Since I've been practicing. Before, I just would have been at a loss and just sort of like dragged myself and suffered through it. Now, I would like to get to the point where I would be focused enough not to get to that point of ennui and boredom, but at the moment, it really does help.
Wonderful. Yeah, thank you. Right, because that's mindfulness. When you simply notice what's happening internally, you notice where the mind has gone. Ah, I got bored. I got overstimulated. Right, I got flooded with frustration. I wanted nothing but a cheeseburger and a movie, and I'm turning the phone off. Just noticing, right, without judgment, but with that willingness to notice. And then perhaps even for 2 minutes, doesn't have to be for an hour, just to bring the mind back. You can even dedicate your cheeseburger, right? May this time of enjoyment, you know, may this fabulous burger, right, usher in sense of fullness, right, and excitement for the benefit of all.
It could be a vegan burger.
Yeah, vegan burger. Vegan burger.
That would really benefit all.
Sure. And may all the vegans have the very best vegan burger, right? So we can do that. When we're going through something lovely, we can dedicate that to all. When we're going through something difficult, may all beings who are going through something similar be relieved of the suffering. It's for this reason that very senior Buddhist teachers will tell you they never feel lonely. Because they're always holding in mind the experience of others. So if they're suffering, they're aware countless other people are suffering with them, right? Always. If they're feeling well, they're delighted, right, that someone else might also be feeling well, and they want to offer it to others. Yeah. Okay. So lastly, and then I'd like to take your questions and any comments. This next one is, whichever of two occurs, be patient. Whichever of two, T-W-O, occurs, be patient. And in the commentary, it goes on to explore how our circumstances are always in flux. Always, right? When good things are happening, most of us hope that will always be so, right? May this loving friend always be there with me. Whew. May this peaceful home always stay peaceful. May this good health be there for me. But reality is dynamic. And when we're going through difficult experiences, painful experiences, it can be easy to lose patience, right? Because it stirs a lot of fear, a lot of anxiety, a lot of anger. And so this Lojong practice, whichever of two occurs, meaning the pleasurable or the difficult and unpleasant, be patient. Right, be patient. And this can be so helpful. Right? I mean, I find this to be challenging. When things are really not what I had hoped for, what I would describe euphemistically as suboptimal, there's a part of the mind that says, no, not this. I did everything for that. But then this is happening, And it's very easy to lose patience. But in the Dharma, it's suggested that if we can cultivate like that patient mind and heart, then we will suffer less when we are coping with pain. And again, this is why our great teachers inspire us, because that's what they do, right? They deal with extraordinary difficulty. But they don't end up on the sidewalk weeping or banging their fists, right, the way many of us do in childhood, and mentally we do sometimes for the rest of our lives. They stay anchored to that part of the mind that is very patient. Not passive, right, because sometimes we have to actively respond. Very patient, because whatever it is we're experiencing, it's going to change, it's going to shift. That's simply the nature of reality. Sometimes the change is so slow, right, it's glacial, that it's easy to lose patience. Yeah. But this teaching, whatever the two occurs, the patient, it's saying, look, when we're suffering, let's try to use the suffering for our own well-being. Let's try to mine it for insight that can benefit others. Right? This is what all the great activists in the world do. They use their own personal suffering. They try to understand it so exquisitely that they can respond skillfully and protect others from similar suffering. It's very inspiring, right? Rather than getting lost in their own suffering, which is so tempting, and I do this routinely. I've made an art as a third generation New Yorker. I know all about losing patience and complaining. Right? There was a New Yorker cartoon that once said, "No." The three components of the human condition, it's not thinking, feeling, contemplating, it's complaining. It's two other things. That's basically right. Yeah. But I have learned over time, and I have learned from my teachers, right, people who have lost their country, right, people who have really suffered. People who have fled with their families suddenly, and lived in refugee camps and lost most of their family members. And people experience enormous suffering. That it is possible, really is possible, to cultivate that abiding patience. So that no matter what is happening, there's that curious, receptive part of the mind that says, this may not be what I would choose. These are the 16 reasons why I do not like this. But I'm going to stay curious. I'm going to try to understand the causes and conditions. I'm going to use it to sustain a feeling of well-being so that I can show up for others as fully as possible. And if your circumstances are joyful, I'm really going to let myself enjoy this. I'm not going to defend against the joy. I'm going to feel the gratitude. I'm going to revel in it. Oh, I have this dear friend, right? I get to see her. This is tremendous. Or I get to hear a sermon that gives me inspiration. And I get to come to All Souls with all of you remarkable human beings. Right? We could be anywhere. I'm gonna feel the joy, right? So that it offers inspiration to keep going with deepest well-being. And I'm gonna be patient too, because it's gonna shift. It's going to turn into something else. Mm-hmm.